Hello, I'm Sonny Melendrez.
And I'm Linda Melendrez.
And we've got great news for OWL Radio listeners.
That's right. Sonny and I are joining the OWL Radio family.
Every month, Linda and I will take to the OWL Radio airwaves with two new back-to-back features. The first is called The Next Chapter with Linda Melendrez, featuring fascinating chapters from Linda's favorite books and more. I know you're going to love it.
In the second half of our 30-minute visit with you, Sonny will share remarkable stories of his life and times in the world of entertainment and beyond.
So stay tuned for the next chapter with Linda Melendrez.
And the life and times of Sonny Melendrez.
What do you say we get started?
I'm ready.
Take it away.
Hi, everybody. I'm Linda Melendrez with another episode of The Next Chapter. From captivating articles to fascinating books, celebrity news, and more. I've got it here on The Next Chapter. Well, as you know, we recently lost a giant in the world of music. There will never be anyone with the talent and charisma of Tony Bennett. Here's a tribute I found in People magazine. Music legend Tony Bennett has died. He was 96. Tony Bennett, born Anthony Dominic Benedetto in Astoria, Queens, on August 3, 1926, has passed away in his hometown of New York City at the age of 96. His representative told People magazine in a statement, "The beloved singer, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in 2016, is survived by his wife, Susan Benedetto, and two sons and his daughters, and nine grandchildren." The Icon's family confirmed in January of 2021 that Bennett had been quietly living with Alzheimer's disease since 2016. The revelation came as part of a profile on his life for AARP magazine. When news broke of his health, Bennett was still capable of recognizing his friends and family. Bennett's wife, who became his primary caregiver, told the magazine that he was not always sure where he was or what is happening around him, and that mundane objects as familiar as a fork or a set of house keys can be utterly mysterious to him. His neurologist said that keeping up with his music has been incredibly beneficial for the Grammy Award winner. It kept him on his toes and also stimulated his brain in a significant way. He's doing so many things at 94 that many people without dementia cannot do. He really is the symbol of hope for someone with a cognitive disorder. According to Benedetto, the singer was always in good spirits, even during the journey with Alzheimer's. But that's because he already didn't understand, she told AARP. He would ask me, "What is Alzheimer's?" And I would explain, and he just wouldn't get it. He'd tell me, "Susan, I feel fine." That's all he could process, that physically he felt great, she said. So nothing changed in his life. Anything that did change, he wasn't aware of. Bennett was a master jazz vocalist whose unique style and devotion to the classic American songbook carried him through 8 decades of fame. He released his debut single, Because of You, in 1951 and dropped one of the most popular hits, I Left My Heart in San Francisco, in 1962. Over the course of his iconic career, Bennett amassed 20 Grammy Awards, including a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2001. He gained recognition in the Grammy Hall of Fame for I Left My Heart in San Francisco in 1994. Additionally, the late star won 2 Emmy Awards. In 2017, Tony Bennett was honored with the Library of Congress Gershwin Prize for Popular Song, making him the first interpretive singer to win the honor. People caught up with the star in celebration of his 90th birthday in 2016. "I'm still wide awake," the iconic artist said at the time. "My doctor likes to kick me out of his office and say, 'There's nothing wrong with you. Don't bother me.' I'm very fortunate. I had a wonderful time growing up in Queens and dreaming about coming to the big city to make it," Bennett told People. It all happened in 1962 with the song I Left My Heart in San Francisco. Even in his late 80s, Bennett never gave up his dream. He won the Grammy Award for Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album 2 consecutive years in a row in 2015 and 2016. His second collection of duets debuted at the top of the charts in September 2011, making Bennett the oldest performer in history to release a number one album. Usually, people are still respected if they show up at 90, but they say, he's not like he used to be and all that. And that's not happening with me, Bennett said. I still have a lot of energy when I hit the stage, and I feel blessed about the fact that I'm still going strong. We were always sold out wherever we played throughout my whole career, and it's a blessing to still have that happen at 90. As much as Bennett maintained his young spirit, the star was required to slow down a bit in September of 2019 when he contracted a virus and was advised to cancel a slew of upcoming performances in order to recover. Still, Bennett always kept an active presence among his fans across all age groups, even posting on his Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram accounts. "Dear Lady," he wrote, "I always knew you could do anything at the highest level of artistry," he shared on Twitter, celebrating Lady Gaga for her 2019 Oscar nods. He was 92 at the time. "Congratulations on your Oscar nominations. Love, Tony." Lady Gaga isn't the only pop star Bennett worked with. He also collaborated with many other artists, including the late Amy Winehouse, Diana Krall, Michael Bublé, Carrie Underwood, and more. In 2016, the star even teased a collaboration with Beyoncé. "Beyoncé," he said, "she's thinking of something to do with me," he previously told People magazine. "We met at a benefit and she said, 'I've got an idea that we should do something together.' She didn't tell me what it was yet, so we'll see what happens." On a personal note, I just want to share that in 2018, my husband and I saw Tony Bennett in concert in San Antonio at the Majestic Theater. I guess it was his last time appearing here. About 20 years prior to that, my husband and I also saw a concert with Tony Bennett. And afterwards, my husband said to me, "Would you like to meet him?" Well, he had, unbeknownst to me, arranged for us to go backstage and meet Tony Bennett. And I have never been starstruck in my life. I worked as an actress in Los Angeles for years, and I had met all kinds of celebrities, and nothing ever thrilled me like meeting Tony Bennett. And I had never asked anyone for an autograph before, but I did request that Mr. Bennett sign my ticket. It was the thrill of a lifetime. And later that week, my husband took the autographed ticket and surprised me with a framed picture of Tony Bennett singing and then the autographed ticket next to it. It was a dream come true. Miss you, Tony. My next chapter is an excerpt from a darling book by Marlo Thomas titled Growing Up Laughing. This chapter is called Celebrations.
"Did you kill him, Daddy?"
"I murdered him, honey. I left him for dead."
"Dialogue from The Sopranos?"
"No, just a call from my father the morning after his opening night at the Sands in Las Vegas. I didn't realize until I was older how violent the language was for a profession that was so filled with laughter. It was life and death, all right, to all of them. But what a celebration when Daddy left him for dead. We were big celebrators anyway. We celebrated everything in our family. My grandmother, the Italian one, my mother's mother, never missed a holiday and sent us elaborately decorated cards on every conceivable occasion with all the good parts underlined, followed by exclamation points. Tucked inside the card was always a hanky and a dollar, or as we got older, $2. What a character she was. She looked like a dark-haired, dark-eyed Sophie Tucker, her idol, by the way.
and sang in that same kind of husky, raucous voice. But Grandma did Sophie one better. Grandma also played the drums. In the 70s, she played the drums with her little band called Marie's Merry Music Makers in a beer garden in Pasadena, California. During the week, she billed herself as Danny Thomas's mother-in-law. On weekends, to get a younger crowd, she billed herself as Marlo Thomas's grandmother. She was some entrepreneur, my grandma. Of course, everyone tried to get her to act her age and give up the drums, or at least the beer garden. My mother wished she would just retire to babysitting and making pasta. My father wished she was Bob Hope's mother-in-law. Well, I adored her. In a family of celebrators, there is always work to be done. The work was divided up. My sister Terry was the cake committee. I, being the oldest and having a bike, was in charge of buying the cards. I'd ride over to Beverly Stationery's on Beverly Drive, where Gladys, the ever-present, ever-dependable proprietor, helped us pick out school supplies each fall. She was also the maven of the card section. Sometimes she'd have a few already put aside for me. I'd pick out something clever and funny for my card. Something with a sweet princess and a loving message from Terry, and one with a picture of a lion or a puppy from little Tony. One year on Father's Day, Terry had gotten Bailey's Bakery to create an elaborate cake with pictures and frosting of all the characters on Dad's TV show, Make Room for Daddy. I had done my job of choosing a custom card from each of us, and after dinner, the ceremonial opening of the gifts began. My present was first, as was the custom. Daddy would read the card aloud, and since mine was always a funny one, we'd all laugh. If it was really funny, he read it aloud again, and the laughter would start all over. Then came Terry's card. Daddy read it aloud. Inside, the saying was beautiful. Hallmark had outdone themselves. It was about how Dad was the best father in the world. Caring and loving, a man who would sacrifice anything for her, who guided her, and who was always there for her. Quite beautiful. Tears all around. I was very proud. But then Daddy looked up from the card. "Terry, do you believe all this?" he asked. "Yes, Daddy," Terry said. Daddy paused. "Because if you really believe what's written in this card," he said, "you'd do the things Daddy wants you to do, wouldn't you?" "Yes, Daddy." "Like right now, where's your retainer?" "It's upstairs, Daddy." "Upstairs? I didn't spend my hard-earned money for you to put your retainer in a drawer upstairs. It belongs in your mouth." His voice rose. "I bought it for you so you would grow up to have beautiful straight teeth with a smile to be proud of." His voice gets even louder as his body began to slowly rise out of his chair. Suddenly, the festive room had become very quiet. Terry looked at me accusingly and said, "You couldn't have given me the other card?" Within seconds, the tense standoff in the room had dissolved into what was more customary under the Thomas roof. Laughter. This still makes me laugh. And my father? She murdered him. Also in the Marlo Thomas book, she has a few pages of silly jokes. I thought I'd share those with you today. If a man speaks in the forest and no woman can hear him, is he still wrong? My wife and I went back to the hotel where we spent our wedding night. Only this time, I stayed in the bathroom and cried. What are three words a woman never wants to hear when she's making love? "Honey, I'm home." "I just got back from a pleasure trip. I took my mother-in-law to the airport." "I never knew what real happiness was until I got married, and by then it was too late." A woman's prayer: "Dear Lord, I pray for the wisdom to understand my husband, the love to forgive him, and the patience for his moods, because, Lord, if I pray for strength, I'll just beat him to death." Two friends meet on the street. One says, "I haven't heard from you in so long. What happened?" The other says, "Well, frankly, You've become a bit pretentious.
The other guy says, moi?
Did you hear the one about? Two Beverly Hills women are shopping on Rodeo Drive when one of them notices a child in a baby carriage. Oh, look at that beautiful baby, says the first woman. Oh, how adorable, says her friend. Then the first woman gasps. Oh my God, that's my baby. Well, how do you know? I recognize the nanny.
And I have one last one for you by George Burns. Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas were married at the time of George Burns' 99th birthday. This is the thank you note he wrote. January 30th, 1995. Dear Phil and Marlo, thanks for the lovely flowers. When you're 99, you get a little confused. You don't know whether to smell the flowers or eat them. But I figured it out. And they were delicious. Thanks again. Love, George.
I'm Linda Melendrez, and I'll be back soon with another episode of The Next Chapter, right here on Owl Radio.
And now, The Life and Times of Sunny Melendrez.
Hello, hello. It's Sunny Melendrez, and so nice to be with you here on Owl Radio with another fun story of my life and times. Whenever my wife Linda and I meet a new couple, the conversation always comes around to asking about their proposal story. And inevitably, they ask us about ours. Well, here's our proposal story. It was Linda's birthday. We're all dressed up to go to dinner to celebrate. And we were in my car in the driveway at my house in Los Angeles, which is where we met. And I said to her, I said, Linda, you know, we really don't have to do anything special. The main thing is that we're together, right? She says, right. I said, wrong. Get out of the car. So now I walk out to the curb and I motion to a car down the street to come up. And up comes this beautiful stretch limousine. Linda is like beside herself. We get in and now we're going to different locations. And at every location, there's a friend or more with a rose. And by the time we have 12 roses, an even dozen, we now head to dinner at the Top of Five restaurant, which is high atop the Bonaventure Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. It's a revolving restaurant, beautiful view, and very romantic. Now it's about 11 p.m. We come down, we get in the limousine, and oh, by the way, every time we made a stop, I had a gift in the trunk that I would give her. In fact, our limo driver said to me, you're just one surprise after another. Yes, I am. So now we're toasting with champagne. It's been a perfect evening and we can head home. Mm-mm. I said to her, Linda, we've got one more stop. It was now 11:30 as we pulled up to the happiest place on earth, Disneyland. Now, I don't know if they still do this, but the Electrical Light Parade was going on, and it's a big parade that ends with fireworks and all kinds of other things, so everybody's on the streets all watching all the floats go by, and we have to make it to the castle. And in fact, I said to Linda, I said, Lindarella, we've got 30 minutes to make it to the castle. So we're weaving in and out, and I think Linda was wearing heels. We're all dressed up. Of course, the tourists are all in casual clothes, and we're just making our way, trying to get to the castle. We finally get there. And as we're standing behind the crowd as they watch the parade, I reached into my pocket and handed her an envelope. Inside was a card in the shape of an Aladdin's lamp. And it read, close your eyes, rub the lamp 3 times, and make a wish. And as she opened her eyes, I was holding a diamond engagement ring, and I asked her to marry me. To which she said, no, she shouted,
yes!
Now, I promise you, what I'm about to tell you is absolutely true. At the moment she shouted yes, the float with Cinderella and the prince came by, and they were standing next to a clock that was chiming 12 midnight. That's our proposal story. Early on in my radio career, I was the program director and on-air personality of a small daytime radio station in El Paso, Texas, KINT. That's actually where I learned to be a broadcaster. Well, this was the era of vinyl records, so every song we played was on a vinyl disc, a 45, and sooner or later, they would get worn out. Now, if they were current hits, it was not a problem because record companies were more than happy to send us several copies of the same song. After all, we were playing their music, and that was good for business. So anytime a song started to sound scratchy on the air, we'd replace it with a brand new copy. Well, not so with the oldies, songs from yesteryear, because once they got worn out, the only recourse was to buy new copies. There was only one problem. We didn't have a budget. So I came up with this idea of having something we called the Great KINT Record Swap Meet. And here's how it worked. Listeners would bring their 45s from their collections and bid them on brand new copies of albums by current artists like the Beatles, Beach Boys, Cream, Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder. You get the idea. So I called the major record labels one at a time and asked them for a case of these various albums. They sent them. We now had cases of these valuable albums, and at the event, listeners in the crowd would bid on each one. Well, the result was hundreds and hundreds of fresh oldies for our library. And of course, our listeners went home happy campers with brand new albums by current artists. Well, one of the record companies that I contacted was RCA. And they told me that they had a new artist who was actually a songwriter, and they were wanting to get him some exposure. And they asked if they flew him in, would I introduce him to the crowd and interview him on stage? Absolutely, I said. And so at that event, I had the pleasure of meeting, talking to, and introducing a soft-spoken, prolific songwriter and singer who had written a song for Peter, Paul, and Mary that now appeared on his debut album. The song was Leaving on a Jet Plane, and the artist was the great John Denver.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blown his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Close your eyes, I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the times I won't have to say. Oh, kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving. babe, I hate to go. But I'm leaving on a jet plane, don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.
Great John Denver and Leaving on a Jet Plane. I'm Sonny Melendrez on Owl Radio, and I have time for one more story. A few years ago, comedian Steve Martin wrote a book about his stand-up days called Born Standing Up. And Linda bought the book and kept wanting to read me chapters of it. And I said, no, I want to read the whole thing when you're through. Well, I remember it was a Friday night. I was in my office down the hall from our bedroom. And I hear this scream, Sonny! Well, I thought she had fallen or something, so I ran down the hall to find her in bed with the book, and she says, you've got to hear this. You've got to hear this. So she starts to read from Steve Martin's book, and as I'm listening, I keep thinking to myself, wait a minute, I've heard this before, but how could I have if I hadn't read the book? And then I realized, I wrote what she was reading. So apparently Steve Martin, in researching that time of his life, came across a blog post that I had written about the night he called me while I was on the air on my radio show in Los Angeles and said that he had just finished mixing the Let's Get Small album and would I like to premiere it on my show? I said, come on down. He came down. And I told the story about what transpired at the end of our interview. And that's what Steve Martin lifted from my blog post and printed it verbatim in his book. So now I'm on the floor of our bedroom, kicking my legs up, laughing, going crazy. So then I wondered if he had an audiobook. Next morning, I'm in the parking lot of Barnes & Noble waiting for them to open. When they do, I make a beeline for the audio section, and sure enough, there it is, Born Standing Up, four-volume set. I buy the audiobook, stick the CD in my car, and this is what I heard.
I do not know if my act holds up these many years later. It is not for me to decide or even think about. Sometimes I hear or see a piece of the old show, and it sounds funny. Sometimes I don't get it, and I can't figure out what all the fuss was about. I did, however, in the course of writing this memoir, come across routines and ad-libs long forgotten that made me smile. Like this description of a radio show in the 70s, remembered by the host, Sonny Melendrez. Steve Martin came directly from a recording session to debut his Let's Get Small album on my show. Before he left, he got very serious, and I truly thought we were seeing another side of him. He launched into a monologue of what seemed like sincere words of friendship. It took me by surprise, given the hour of silliness that had just taken place. Could this be the real Steve Martin, I thought? Sonny, you know, I've listened to you for years, and I really feel like you've become my friend, and I feel like I can ask you this question. Sure, Steve, you can ask me anything. What time is it?
Yep. That's the closing music. In that blog post, without realizing it, I had written the close to Steve Martin's book. And now Steve is going to write the foreword to my next book. He just doesn't know it yet. Well, that's our show.
Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
We'll be back with another episode of The Next Chapter with Linda Melendrez.
And The Life and Times of Sonny Melendrez.
Right here on Owl Radio.